I think it's really easy for us to be hard on ourselves because we did make a lot of mistakes and went into that with a lot of assumptions. And we were real newbies about this kind of stuff. But at the same time, it was also like I found a really exciting time because it was just like so new and felt so cool at times.
It was super exciting.
Like super cool. You know, it was like, wow, I just suddenly have like this group of like three people that I can have hang out with me. And it feels great.
Yeah.
And sleep with sometimes. And that's like super fun, you know, yeah. But also we can, I don't know. There was parts of it that was like really, really cool. And I think even though there were so many mistakes and like a lot of pain that ended up happening, I feel like it was really formative for me to also have those wonderful feelings of like, wow, this is just great. Honestly. Yeah.
Welcome to the Multi-Amory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
So whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you.
On this episode of the Multi-Amory Podcast, it is our 300th episode.
Yay!
Wow.
That's air horns. In case you don't know what air horns sounds like, that's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, so after 6 years, two tours, which were both national in the U.S. and a little bit international, we're almost 1,000 Patreon subscribers, almost 3 million downloads of our podcasts total, and hundreds of hours of recording with you two over the last 6 years. We thought it would be nice to kind of do a little bit of a retrospective. So today we're going to discuss how we started this podcast. If you have been listening since the beginning, you've pieced that together in little pieces, but figured we could share that story for those of you who are interested, as well as how our lives and our relationships have changed since starting the podcast, how the world has changed during the time we've been doing this podcast in terms of perceptions about non-monogamy and relationships, as well as potentially some plans and hopes for the future.
I went to look. I was like, did we do a retrospective on 200 episodes? Like, when was our 200th episode? And I went and looked. And so our 200th episode came out on December 3rd, 2018. And the title of that episode is 200 Episodes Later.
What?
Oh, no.
So I guess we must have done a retrospective then as well, and also failed to spell episodes correctly. So that reflects well on us.
Maybe we should try doing that better this time around. When was the 100th episode? Was it like December 3rd, 2016?
Oh my goodness. No, our 100th episode, that was before recorded history. Before we were recording our like release dates in our own database. I'm sure we could go find it, but
yeah,
I don't want it right now.
Episode 100 was on relationship resolutions, though.
Okay, cool.
So that means it's fine. Yeah, it came out January 3rd, 2017.
Okay. Wow. Look at us. Look at us go. Well done, everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, so we did a retrospective at 200. I don't remember what we talked about. I hope that we don't repeat ourselves too much. I hope we've learned something new between episodes 200 and 300, because that's the course of like almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah.
Wow. And the world has changed a ton in between now and then.
Oh, gosh, you're right. It feels you're right. Thinking about 2018, which is when our 200th episode came out, it feels like freaking lifetime ago.
Yeah, and we had, it was the end of 2018 when that happened? So
yes,
we had just
December.
Gone on our second tour. I think we did our second tour in 2018.
Oh, my God, really?
April, May.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Wow. Incredible, too.
What has happened?
Remember all those dreams we had about doing a tour in this last year?
We started planning a 2020 tour. Super fun.
We wrote a book proposal instead. That was what we spent most of this year doing, a lot of this year
doing.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah. So, Emily, you mentioned when we were going to do this episode that you were surprised by how many people don't know our story or how we started the show, or what was it that you've found? How's that come up?
Yeah, well, the three of us all did like a little interview series for a different podcast, and it was very like clear from the things that they were asking me that they didn't really know like what our whole configuration is now, and like, you know, that I'm not non-monogamous now and haven't been for like a number of years, like things like that. And it does, I do once in a while, like when people slide into our DMs, stuff like that on Instagram, and they're like, wait a minute, like I'm trying to figure out, what are you all three together? Like, what's happening? And so some people clearly don't know. So for those of you like who are listening to this, maybe it would be interesting to you if you didn't already know like what our configuration is as the three of us to kind of hear that like story real quick.
Yeah, I will say it has been interesting that I do occasionally get people who reach out to me who are a little upset that we're not spilling more goss about our personal lives on the show.
I've gotten
actually.
That too, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like we do, you know, try to drop in real life examples from our lives when we're talking about particular principles and stuff like that. But it's like this show has never really been a, we're going to sit and goss about what's been going on with us. I've seen some shows like that. I feel like that's something that I notice more about, like, for instance, like swinger podcasts. I think there's a lot of swinger podcasts, which is just kind of recounting what happened at this event, what happened at that event, you know. And so there's, of course, there's definitely a market and an audience for people who want to kind of live vicariously, especially someone who's living a slightly more scandalous lifestyle necessarily. But the weirdest thing I got was like someone reached out to me, I think this was a couple of years ago, reached out to me saying, well, I assume that all three of you only practice parallel polyamory because you don't really talk about your other partners in extreme detail on the show.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, first of all, that's not really true. But also, second of all, I'm like, there's a thing called privacy.
Sure.
You know, like there is kind of a responsibility where I don't want someone to date me and then be afraid that I'm going to turn around and just like talk all on the podcast about how they were in bed and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
There's a balance there.
And to be fair, too, I think if that's what you're looking for in a podcast, there's a lot of podcasts out there that will give you that. Even kind of more mainstream dating advice shows that I'm not a big fan of the advice they give love to gossip about their personal lives or tease each other about them or talk about the sex that they had or whatever. So I also think there's a lot of that already, you know, that there's, if that's what you want, you can get it.
Yeah.
But if you are interested in knowing, like, at least, like, our backstory.
Yeah, yeah.
So it goes all the way back to 1987. I was born.
That was when you were born. I wasn't even alive then, okay?
Emily wasn't around. Jace had already been on the planet for
a good long while.
A good 20 years or something like that.
No, I was 5 or 6,
you're a little tiny baby.
When we are, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I'm going to fast forward through history a little bit. I think that When I think about my life before meeting Jace and Emily,
oh gosh,
this might make me a little emotional.
Oh,
okay. Because I mean, it's really characterized by honestly feeling really alone, not like in my life as a whole. I had people, you know, but kind of feeling really alone, I guess, in my identity and in the fact that I was like pursuing polyamory. And it honestly really felt like it's like literally the only people I have to talk about this are the people that I am dating, some of whom are really not receptive to that, some of whom don't really get it, some of whom are the people I'm dating and they shouldn't, you know, be carrying the full burden of needing to be all of my community and stuff like that. But I don't know. I mean, before I met the two of you, I was definitely at a place where I was only just starting to, I think, start to take ownership of being polyamorous, really. You know, I was only just starting to be very blunt about that with the people that I was dating, but I definitely didn't really have any friends who were into that. And I also up to that point had pretty much all negative metamorph experiences as well. You know, like leading up to that point, it was a lot of, you know, I was dating people where my metamorphs were pretty clearly secondary or just kind of hookups and stuff. And so there wasn't really a need to meet them, or they were dating people in kind of not very ethical ways, and so there was just naturally like some bad blood there, often from the start, between myself and my metamours. So that's the place that I was before meeting all y'all. And I feel like, Jason, Emily, the two of you have talked a little bit more on the show about, you know, your process of opening up and how that went for the two of you and stuff like that. But I don't know if there's anything else that you recall from that time of the pre-multi-amory era of what strikes you the most from that time or what you remember.
Yeah, I mean, something we've talked about before on the show is that when we started this podcast, Emily and myself had only been doing polyamory for something around a year
or
so.
A hot second, really.
And you knew everything. We all knew everything at that point. So we're like, let's start a podcast.
That's the thing. I'm surprised at how much, surprised and not surprised, because that does seem to be kind of like the thing that people joke about.
The phase you go through.
Yeah. Right. Like, oh, you know everything now. You've unlocked like relationships and you understand everything about them and like you're perfect at them. So clearly we thought that and we were like, we should tell other people the good news and spread the gospel of multi-amory. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely something that stands out for me. And I think that that's also why our first 75 episodes are gone. They're in the archive.
Yeah. Bye-bye. No, thank you.
Because, yeah, there's just stuff in those where I don't think there was a lot of stuff that's just like 100% wrong or we've completely changed our mind, but more that we've maybe found better or more respectful ways to talk about those things, or just
got
some ideas.
Got better at researching, got better at finding appropriate guests and experts and things like that.
Yeah. And
we weren't just talking about our Twitter comments like for like 45 minutes before we actually got into the meat of the episode, that kind of shit.
Right.
Some of you out there know what I'm talking about.
Yep. There are a few of you out there who remember those days.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think that really stands out to me, just that we kind of started a little bit more like a show of just like, hey, let's talk about our life doing this thing. And it kind of has become something more that is like, we try to be as research based as we can while still not being researchers. Like, we're not scientists, but we're all people who...
But we play scientists on TV.
I know. Exactly. It was like, well, we're not a scientist. No, we're not scientists. But yeah.
Yeah, so we
play
just
them
play
on
them
a podcast.
On a podcast. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Well, so I want to rewind the tape a little bit to talking about, I think Emily was my first point of contact. Emily was the first one to come into my life, in that my partner at the time, Brad, started dating her. And what was really special about that was like the first time that I was dating someone really seriously, where when they started dating somebody new, they were like pretty honest about it.
And
cool about it. And just like, oh yeah, here's her dating profile. And we went on a date and this is what we talked about, you know, where I was like really led into that process. And it was, both exciting and like a little bit scary, because I remember when I found out that you were like this huge video game nerd and super nerdy in general, like at first that was really threatening, because I was like, but that's my thing.
Yeah.
You know, not at all realizing that I'm like, no, that's actually a really good thing that my metamour and I have that kind of overlap and interest, because it's not a competitive thing. It's like, oh, that means there's a much higher likelihood that we're going to get along and have stuff to talk about. And that lesson from that experience has come back in my life multiple times, that like if I have a partner who starts dating somebody and there's something about them that's a little threatening or something like that, that I remind myself that, no, this could be the cue that I actually would really love this person, this metamour, you know, and actually really, really could have a really wonderful friendship or business partner relationship with them, potentially.
Yeah, or both. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You probably weren't thinking of business partner yet. That probably came along.
Not yet. And so from my partner dating Emily and then Emily going home and telling Jace, hey, this guy that I dated also is dating this super cool sounding person, Dedeker.
Yeah.
And then Jace and I started dating. And so that was kind of the origin of like the first quad that I had ever been in.
Yeah, I think
definitely
all of us,
that we had ever.
Yeah. That was the origin of the quad, which, I mean, I want to hear from all y'all about what you think about this as well. I think it's really easy for us to be hard on ourselves because we did make a lot of mistakes and went into that with a lot of assumptions. And we were real newbies about this kind of stuff. But at the same time, it was also like I found a really exciting time because it was just like so new and felt so cool.
It was super exciting, super cool.
You know, I was like, wow, I just suddenly have like this group of like three people that I can have hang out with me. And it feels great.
Yeah.
And sleep with sometimes. And that's like super fun, you know, but also we can, I don't know. There was parts of it that was like really, really cool. And I think even though there were so many mistakes and like a lot of pain that ended up happening, I feel like it was really formative for me to also have those wonderful feelings of like, wow, this is just great. Honestly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Jason and I had dated really like since the very beginning of 2011, like met in 2010, and were monogamous until when did we start being polyamorous, Jason? Like in the early 2014 or 2013, I guess?
It would have been 2013, because that's when we all met. Yeah.
Seems so long ago. It really was a long time ago. Wow. Yeah, no, I mean, really, like, the time this episode comes out will be, like, right around my anniversary of meeting Jace 10 years ago, which is
pretty incredible.
Like, in terms of, yeah, people in my life, I'd say there are few that I'm as close with who I've known as long as you, for sure. And really, like, that extends to you, Dedeker, as well. I think, yeah, coworkers and, like, people come and go out of your life.
Right.
But, like, you two have very much stayed in a very meaningful way, obviously. So, yeah, I think in terms of, like, becoming this quad at the time, it was very much for me, like, a kind of a sexual awakening of so many things in terms of, like, my own personal sexuality, coming to terms with the fact that, like, I'm, like, I can say that I'm bisexual and, like, deal with it, and it is a thing, and, you know, being okay with that, and yeah, but then also understanding, I don't know, at the time, what, I was 25, maybe? 24, 25, I know. And so I think just by merit of me being as young as I was, I also did just believe, like, yeah, I know what the hell I'm doing and talking about and whatever, and, like, this is really flighty and fun and with no consequences, which ended up not being the case. Yeah.
Well, but I also feel like, and I'm thinking about that time as well, that not only were we in this quad, I feel like all four of us in that quad were just like dating like gangbusters. Like,
just all kinds of people. Yeah.
I think, yeah, it was that combination of like, I think that phase that we see a lot of polyamory newbies go through of both, like, once you finally find the equilibrium and then you're like, oh, wow, I figured it out and I know everything about relationships, combined with that like poly joy of I can date everyone if I want to.
Yeah.
I don't have to say no to any experience.
I don't have to say no to anybody. Like, I feel like all of us were just like going on dates like all the time.
Yeah.
And it was cool for the most part. I mean, there were, you know, little dramas that would happen here and there. But I mean, I look back on that now, I'm just like, Jesus, like, where did I get the energy from?
I know.
Yeah, that's what I think too. We were younger. How about you, Jess? Like, yeah, how are you? How do you feel about that time in your life and like being very new to it as well?
Yeah, I mean, I just all second and third all of the things that you two said of, yeah, that we were just dating a ton, going on tons of dates. And then also, I guess the thing that always jumps out to me is how, even though what we were doing, you know, just being polyamorous and dating people and being open about that felt very radical, when I look back on it, I think of how very normal, or like, I don't know what the right word is, but how very kind of still standard in terms of how I was approaching gender at the time and what dating looked like and what sex is and like what defines a relationship versus not, that all that was still very, quote, normal, you know, very kind of standard stuff that I'd inherited from culture, right? From our TV, from our society. And so it's funny looking back on that now and thinking, wow, I thought I was so being so radical, and really I was still so mainstream, and that I feel like I've gradually moved away from that. But that's been more of this kind of slower process of various realizations or moments of, I don't know, epiphany, or being presented with something that I hadn't considered before. And I think a lot of that is thanks to this podcast being so, the fact that we do this every week. And so every week being proactive about researching these things or trying to find new guests or looking at other people's podcasts or blog posts or things really kind of broadened my horizons a lot more than I probably thought was even possible when we started this.
So, as happens to many quads, we are no longer a quad.
Right.
Yeah, Brad is not in the picture at all.
Well, I feel like when we had Kathy Labriola on the podcast last, when she was talking about her polyamory breakup book, you know, she talked about how she witnesses this kind of collapsing effect that quads maybe have a tendency to collapse into a triad, and then triads on their own often tend to have a tendency to collapse into a dyad sometimes.
Oh, well, that happened. There
which
it
is definitely what happened. Those are the dominoes, yeah. But I think what was different for us was we still kind of ended up maintaining, again, what I call like our emotional triad, co-parenting a little baby podcast, you know, that I think, you know, for a number of factors, I know you and Emily and Jace have talked a lot about this, you know, having that period where after you'd broken up, like still living in the house together and still recording a podcast together and really having to navigate how do we both disentangle and reforge kind of a new friendship at the same time. And same, I mean, between you and me also, Emily, you know, kind of figuring out how do we disentangle this old relationship and then kind of reforge this new friendship. So I think that's the thing is why like people get really confused. It is the hard thing that by the three of us, it is the hard thing that when you're in the polyamory or non-monogamy space, and especially online space, if you see three people in a picture together, oh, a triad, that's got to be a triad. And especially if it's a man with two women, it's like, oh, it's definitely a triad. You know, and so I think it's understandable that people get confused, especially when we're like, yeah, but we feel like our relationship is actually better than it ever was when we were a triad, you know, and there's a lot of intimacy here and stuff like that. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's definitely been... you know, I think that collapsing process that we went through with like all the drama and all the pain that kind of came out of that period of time, I know at least for me, really crystallized a lot of the things that I realized were actually important to me about relationships, you know, and I feel like working on this podcast has definitely really crystallized for me a much bigger spectrum of what relationships can look like, you know, like it's no longer just this tiny little box of are we romantic and sexual or are we not, that it's much more of a
an amorphous
rainbow spider web.
Wow.
Rainbow spider web. Gosh.
That would be bitching to see in real life. Yeah, I think that that transition process actually took like years for me, like truly years.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, even though, you know, we talk about like, oh, there was a 6-month period where like Jason and I were like still, it was a little challenging. And then like all of a sudden it was like cool again. But truly, even throughout that time and beyond, in order to like really fully crystallize in our minds, in my mind at least, like how to navigate like a relationship with these two people who I was intimate with, who now I see being intimate in front of me, and I'm not with them. Like that was a big transitional period that took years, honestly, for me to kind of navigate mentally and emotionally, and then also to kind of understand that, yeah, it's not like this one or other thing. Like it can be me having a relationship with the two of you that like is truly intimate and a friendship, but with all that added history that I think is really like beautiful and important and not something that a lot of people ever really get to do.
Yeah.
Or choose to do.
And right. I feel like another part of that as well, you know, along the lines of kind of like stuff that we think is interesting, but like journalists and producers tend to not find very interesting.
Like, oh, you're boring as hell.
Like, oh, we just want to see you fuck and talk about how you're going to raise a baby together as a triad. That's all we want. I mean, I think that there was also a period of a few years where I don't want to say full on identity crisis for the show, but I will say, you know, definitely like Emily, as you were transitioning to being more like consciously monogamous, necessarily, you know, I think that there was definitely some questions around that because I don't know. It's not like anyone very clearly laid down this expectation of like, if you're going to talk about non-monogamy, you have to be living it. But I think we definitely felt
was
that
a question.
Yeah, definitely like, a question.
Yeah, I was like, do I still have relevance on this show? Like, are there the things that I say, like, are they relevant to the audience and all of those things? And I think at that point also, it transitioned to a degree the show away from just exclusively being about polyamory and non-monogamy and non-traditional relationships to being about something broader and bigger. And I feel like personally that also made like my experience of learning in terms of like how good and fulfilling relationships can be when you think about them from a different level than just like what the normal whatever is, that it like broadened my horizons, I guess, as you said, in that way as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm into it because I feel like something that's connected to what I would like to see in the future for this particular community is I would just love to have access to more community that isn't based solely on we all have an interest in polyamory, and so that's the only real little safe space that we can find. Because I do feel like my most enriching community experiences have been communities that are just like really welcoming of people who are in non-traditional relationships, but that's not the sole reason why we're gathering here today.
Yeah.
You know, like I really love this idea of being able to see like a space where it's like we can have someone who's really traditional monogamous or someone who's a relationship anarchist and someone who's polyamorous or someone who's solo poly and no one's feeling inherently threatened or pressured by that. And so, I mean, that's also been my hope in the fact that like, you know, Emily, you're still here being monogamous, but still talking about all these things is it feels like something that should be so easy and so obvious. And yet in our world really isn't. You know,
it's a really great point that you're making. Yeah. How do you feel about all this, Jace?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. And I think that it's interesting because I think it changes the dynamic a little bit of what you can talk about. So say you have a community that's all like the thing you all have in common is that you're polyamorous. There can be this tendency to be like, ooh, we're finally in our own space so we can kind of talk shit about the normies. Or the muggles, or whatever term you're going to use, right? And the same thing's true in, like, kink spaces. It's like, you can kind of dig on vanilla people, or, right? It's because it's like, oh, we feel like we're always kind of being told we're a little bit bad, so now we're finally together, and we can talk about everyone else being bad instead. And I think that there is value in that, having that opportunity, having that type of community when you're someone who... when you're part of a community that doesn't get to do that in normal society. But I think that there's also a lot of value, and it's sometimes harder to find that type of community, like Dedeker was talking about, that can be proactively inclusive enough, not just like, oh, we don't care what your orientation is, but like very proactively welcoming of something that's different from the normal, but also welcoming of monogamy and things like that. It's like kind of redefining what unifies us. So instead of just being this one relationship type, it's the fact that whatever we're doing, we're willing to question it and look at it and kind of examine what we're doing instead of taking it for granted, maybe.
Yeah, I think that it would be so cool as we continue to kind of evolve as humans and like in this perhaps more progressive space that it feels like maybe the world is going towards that.
Exactly. Just so our listeners know, we're recording this before the election. So
we're recording it on election day before the election has actually happened. But
so
yeah,
if we sound blissfully naive in any way, you'll have to forgive us.
Yeah. But truly, I mean, this idea that maybe through learning about other people and, you know, understanding each other and like actively doing the work that is needed in order to like change a person's mind or even just like bring awareness to someone. That's what I think this podcast has done for me in so many ways. It's like it's brought awareness to things that I just truly was not thinking about, like I was completely ignorant to. And again, you know, when, as I've said in multiple outlets, like you can't unring the like bell of polyamory once you've done it and once you've like lived it. So even if I'm not like actively doing it on a daily basis, I still can like bring a lot of the ideas that I was utilizing in my daily life as a polyamorous person into my current relationship and into just my life in general. And, you know, a bunch of other shit that we've learned on this as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest change I've noticed in myself and kind of how I approach the world in relationships you know, from the start of this podcast to today is, I do feel at the start of this podcast, I think because we were going through so much drama and so much pain and there was a lot of really difficult questions coming up, I think it kind of shoehorned me into this particular set of ideas of like, well, this, okay, I know what I know about myself and I think this is the correct way to do polyamory and this is the way that I think most people should do it and that's the way it is. And I think from doing this show and hearing about so many people's different experiences in my work, working with clients, especially hearing so many people's different experiences, I really feel I've gotten to this point where I'm almost at a place of just feeling like I almost kind of don't care what format of relationship you are in or you choose. Just please do it in a way that's like ethical and kind and everyone is consenting and everyone has access to happiness, you know? And I feel that clinging to that understanding, that new understanding, is something that helps me when I feel tempted to slip into something like, say, like gatekeeping in this community, you know, of like, oh, your polyamory is okay, but your polyamory is not okay. I still think it's important to have standards, again, like kind of holding people up to this rubric of like, well, is everybody consenting? Is everybody actually happy? Is there kind of equanimity in this relationship? Are people being kind to each other? But yeah, I feel like I'm more disinclined to gatekeep in that way, just based on somebody's relationship format, I feel.
We're going to take a quick break right here to talk about our sponsors and some ways that you can support this show to keep this going for another 100 episodes, we hope.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
All right, we're back. So we're going to move on to talking a little bit about now sort of how things have changed over time, not just in our own thinking, but even outside of that as well. And so first thing that I looked up for this was about podcasts about polyamory. Like, part of our story that we tell people about why we started the Multiamory podcast was because there just weren't any resources out there, or there weren't a lot of resources out there, and there especially weren't any that were by young people, which we believed ourselves to be at the time, right? You know,
are we still young?
I don't know. It's all relative, right?
Well, it's relative,
yeah,
right. But you know, it was all stuff like The Ethical Slut or you know, Sex at Dawn or whatever else, right? Like, all things written by people who were very much boomers. I guess we'll put it that way.
Maybe Gen Xers.
There were some Gen Xers. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that for sure. But I mean, definitely there were very few people talking about social media or Tinder or, you know, just kind of like
the same way. Yeah.
In the same way, this like later wave of non-monogamy and polyamory and stuff like that.
And then specifically in the world of podcasting, there was Polyamory Weekly was kind of the one podcast about polyamory. And then there was like Tristan Taramino's Sex Out Loud, talked about it sometimes, but it wasn't specifically polyamory focused.
There's Cooper.
And there were some swinger podcasts that talked a little bit about polyamory, Again, all of them a little bit from an older generation than us, more maybe Gen X-ish, but there kind of wasn't any. So we're like, oh, we'll start this. And then just today, I did a search for polyamory podcasts, and I have here something in the neighborhood of 200 results that have just come up of shows that either have polyamory in the title or in their description of what the show is. So this isn't even just episode topics. This is in your show description or in your tags or your title, right? Like 200. And when I search the word polyamory, that specific word shows up in the titles or the descriptions of around 100 of those, like within the first sentence of their description, even.
I see.
So like that it's enough of a focus that it's right there. And they're everything from shows that are very specifically about polyamory to things that are a little bit more general, but polyamory is one of the kind of main topics they mention as being something they discuss. So that's just pretty fascinating to see how different that is from when we were starting this podcast.
Definitely.
6 years
that's
ago.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I think podcasts in general have really like exploded. Like, isn't that a joke now? Like, oh, well, everyone has a podcast. You're just like, I'm going to start a podcast and, you know, but we like did it before that happened, which I'm proud of us about.
Slightly.
We were still part of the boom. I don't think that we were before the boom, but
we were in
the
upswing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been really interesting. I've definitely found that when I think about, I'm trying to think of the timeline here because my book, we started the podcast in 2014.
Your book came out in 2017.
Yeah, I started writing that book in 2015, came out in 2017. And it's been really interesting because it's like the times that I've been brought on for interviews, whether it's on like TV shows or a live stream show or somebody else's podcast or a radio show or a news program or whatever, that the nature of the questions I feel has changed. Just slightly, you know, there's still some old classics like what about jealousy? Everyone likes to ask that question still.
Classic.
That I feel like back in the day, and again, we're talking about the span of less than a decade here, which is wild to think about. But back in the day, it was either I was being interviewed by someone who was already all in on polyamory, you know, or it was a little bit more of the sensationalist. Let me ask you about the sex. How the heck does this work? Who do you think you are that you can get this to work? You know, a lot of people that I would count as quote unquote outsiders to the community, like sometimes doing a little bit of a sideshow-esque, like, hey, let's talk to this weirdo for a day or something, like a little bit more of that sense. I mean, I never really had any like awful, like just truly awful experiences, but that was just kind of the sense that I got. And nowadays, what I've noticed happening a lot more is people reaching out to me for interviews on their show, for their article, for their live stream show, whatever it is, and asking a lot of questions, being really, really curious. And then as soon as we're off the air, inevitably it's like, okay, so actually, so like me and my boyfriend have started talking about this like 6 months ago and like we started reading this stuff. And that's how I came across your book. And I just thought it was really interesting. And just wondering if you have any like advice for this.
Oh my God, read the book.
It's like happened so many times of like where it's people are, I think, just feeling more comfortable to be curious about these things and to be honest of like, hey, actually, I'm thinking about this for myself. And that's leading me down this particular rabbit hole of research.
Well, and like I said before, like the cultural understanding of it, I think, is there's just more understanding. It's not completely, whoa, this is like taboo and weird and I'm not going to be okay with it because it's something that I've never heard of before. It is more in like the understanding of those people who are like in the relationship space or just in general. I think it's like even in some of our TV shows, as we've talked about twice on this podcast, devoted two whole episodes to. And so, yeah, I think maybe we're just starting to have people find it to be like less sensational. And so it's just being, they're asking like harder, more detailed questions, perhaps, about it.
It's almost like the overall narrative about it, even if for most of culture, it's still kind of this weird thing, this kind of weird experiment that you could do, that I think that I've noticed that the narrative is less around, opening up a relationship is just something you do before you break up or while you're looking for something better, to now being like, this is a thing that you can try, and it doesn't necessarily mean your relationship's over. I think that subtle change in how people look at it has maybe made more couples willing to at least entertain the idea or look into it, because there's less of this sense of like, we can't take that step because once we do that, we're doomed. And instead it's like, well, I don't know, maybe that's something that we could try. I don't know. And if it doesn't work out, that also could be okay. We could go back to being monogamous. And I think that's definitely a big change from my impressions and like the ways people asked me questions about it when Emily and I first opened up.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
That reminds me, literally just the other day, I had a news article fed up to me from Slate. It was like Slate's advice column. And the headline was just, oh, this guy I started dating just dropped a bombshell on me. What do I do? And for a second, I was like, I wonder if it's polyamory. And I was like, it's probably not. It's probably something else. And then I clicked on it. And that's what it was. It was, you know, she was like, I was talking to this guy. Seems like we really meshed well. It's the first person I've met in a long time online that I felt this with, but then he told me that he was poly, and I know about myself that I'm like really emotionally needy and I have low self-worth, and so I don't know if I should go for it or not. And I was just like bracing for what the response was going to be, you know, because it's sometimes still a little bit of a crapshoot of how people are going to respond to it. And I was so surprised. It was two people who were kind of responding to this advice column, that they were actually like, they did not make polyamory the thing that they attach to. Like, instead they were like, oh, it's actually kind of sad that you feel like you're super needy and have this low self-worth. Like, let's talk about those things. And like, maybe you could talk to a therapist about those things, because that's going to be helpful for you in general. And like, maybe polyamory is not for you, or maybe you could find that actually it's really fantastic and great, and this person's wonderful. And it was just so refreshing to see these two people who were giving this advice, who were not necessarily in the community, and I don't think either of them identified as polyamorous, to at least give this kind of fair shake take on maybe it could be bad for you, maybe it could be good, which that also feels rare. It feels still a little bit rare. I feel like mostly in the space that's not, though, that's outside of the polyamory community, it's a lot of either direct condemnation or very pro. Like, I don't know. I don't know what your impressions are of that.
I think that, yeah, like, even going, I mean, as I have talked about on the show, I've gone to, like, one therapy session, like, one, like, actual therapy experience in college, but then I did go to couples therapy once, like, within the last 5 years, and I was amazed at the time, like, how when polyamory got brought up, the therapist didn't blanch at it, she didn't, like, freak out or say that that was like the root of any issue that my partner and I were having, but rather that it just, you know, let's talk about that some more. And so I do think people are educating themselves more, like therapists and advice columnists or whatever, educating themselves more. And so it is becoming at least just another option that lets explore that, as opposed to being the cause of all of your issues that you ever have. And like, that's inherently bad or something. So that's good. That's a good change.
Yeah.
So like, rapid fire, I just had some things that I wanted to ask regarding like the podcast and like what it's kind of meant. So like, do you two have a favorite episode that we've done, a favorite guest? They're all amazing. We love all of you. But like, favorite guest, or like a favorite like tool that we've created or piece of knowledge that we like use on the podcast?
That was like six questions.
That was three questions. It was three questions. I had my fingers up and you saw them in the so yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. With favorite episode or with favorite guest, that's a little too hard. We've had just such amazing guests on the podcast and covered such fascinating topics. So that's a little too hard. So I'm not gonna answer those. But as far as like most used tool or favorite tool, that's a hard one too. That's a really hard one too. I mean, realistically, most used art for me in my life are like the Triforce and Radars. Honestly, I do feel like Radars, and specifically and just having the freedom to have a relationship check-in, has freed up so much in my life and in my relationships. It's freed up so much brain space. It's really changed the way that I feel about confronting partners on things. So I would say that.
I wish I had like a different answer, but also I think Triforce and Radar are the biggest ones for me. Interestingly about the radar, what you were saying about kind of giving you permission to have check-ins, that I think that whenever you and I, Dedeker, have had to have, or even the three of us for our like company meetings too, whenever we've needed to have a like, okay, let's sit down and figure out this thing. Like Dedeker and I recently, and maybe we'll talk about this on a future episode, we tried out this system for dividing household chores. That's sort of a whole, there's a whole structure to it, which we like because it reminds me of Radar a little bit, that there's specific steps and specific things you do, and it's a little bit like a game. But doing that was very much like we came in having all the tools that we've developed from doing our radars of just, we know how to take breaks, how to meta communicate about what we're communicating about, right? Just all of that really, it's just, it's developed a lot of skills and tools that I think I use very regularly, even outside of my romantic relationships. And then the Triforce is just one that I've just found not only really helpful for myself, but really helpful for explaining to other people, because it kind of simplifies this concept of sometimes you're not giving someone what they actually want in an exchange, that and that understanding what they want can help you give that to them and kind of help sort of demystify, like, why is it that this person gets upset with me when I'm trying to help them? And I think that's just been such a big one that I've found really helpful to tell other people.
Yeah, I gave someone the Triforce advice on Sunday when I was at work.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he was like, why do I just, I gave my girlfriend advice and she was like, that's not what I want from you. And I said, well, why don't you try asking her next time what it is that she wants when you get in a conversation like that? Ask her, like, do you need some love and care and affection and just poor baby? Or do you actually want to problem solve this with me? Or are you just telling me like what's happening here? So I tried to like infuse the Triforce a little bit on it.
Infuse. Nice infusion.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to add one too. I'm going to say also the idea that we've talked about from the Gottman Institute, which is about taking bids. Taking other people's bids and the importance of that. Yeah. I think that's one that I've found comes up with my parents, with my siblings, with my friends, with my coworkers, in addition to my relationships, that just this idea of, I guess, realizing how important it is to do what you can to acknowledge a bid and to say yes to it, even if it's not a, okay, we're just going to do what you said, but kind of acknowledging that by treating this bid seriously and taking it seriously and turning toward it, I'm improving our relationship and making sure that person doesn't feel rejected or ignored. And then similarly, if I'm ever feeling rejected or ignored or not appreciated, I'm able to kind of step back and see, it's like, oh, right, it's because those bids aren't being accepted. Maybe I could also take a different approach of when I give those bids, or just not take it so personally. Like when I try to give any sort of bid to Dedeker within the first 2 hours of her waking up in the morning, it's not going to go well.
Oh my gosh. She's going to be coughing and upset.
She's just going to be grumpy with me. Yeah. But by understanding bids, I'm able to kind of take that outside of, this is how she thinks of me, and more just, how is she able to receive my bids or not?
Yeah.
What about you, Emily?
I use Triforce. I think so many of our, of like the tools that we've created and that we've learned about have truly been for us from like a bigger granular level, being able to like, even if whatever we're doing isn't quite working on the other person, or, you know, the bid isn't being taken or whatever, we're able to step back and say, like, hey, I understand what's happening. Like, I understand the bigger picture of, like, what's occurring there. And I don't need to take something so personally or be so upset about it. And, yeah, I think my personal, like, for lack of a better word, anger in relationships or being judgmental of, like, myself or other people, or, yeah, it being pissed off or upset at someone, like, that's taken a step back over the years, because I've been like, hey,
it's okay. Like, I get kind of what's going on here, and I understand, like, they probably didn't mean to do that, even if I'm getting, like, frustrated or upset about it. I can kind of understand, like, maybe where they're coming from, or maybe I just need to approach something in a different way. So, yeah, what you said as well, I think it enables, like, more self-awareness in addition to being aware of how other people tick. Like, you understand that you personally can, like, take a step back and not take everything so personally.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I think that there's been this overarching theme for me of realizing that creating structure and systems can be great, actually. Mm-hmm. Even, like, tiny, tiny little systems. I mean, like, the Microscript stuff that we came up with in the past. I mean, like, literally just the other day, Jason identified, like, oh, there's this regular interaction that we have where the way that one or both of us reacts to a particular prompt sets off the other person and makes us both annoyed. And it was like, what if we come with a Microscript for that? You know, just, and so it's like something about feeling really empowered to be like, we can create even a tiny little system, a tiny little tool, a tiny little bit of structure that helps us to communicate really intentionally and really well and in good faith and act as a team instead of just kind of falling into old habits or falling into assuming that someone's out to get me or someone's out to hurt me or stuff like that, that we can kind of, it's like that meta level kind of processing and creation within relationship.
Yeah, it's funny because it reminds me a little bit of our episode from 2 weeks ago talking about eustress and distress, that having that agency of, I feel like this problem is not insurmountable, but we can come up with a system, or we can try things so that we can get past it. I think that is a key part of the tools and stuff, is seeing, okay, there's other ways to talk about this or go about it. We can try things, or as Dedeker likes to say, you know, we can put on our scientist hats and do experiments on ourselves to, like, figure out what's going to work for us. That is really empowering, I think, and helps fight that feeling of helplessness that I personally have experienced in a lot of relationships that have been having trouble, and that I see constantly in people's relationships, kind of this feeling of helplessness, of just like, I can't do anything about this. I can't do anything to fix this. I can't escape this. I can't make it better, kind of a feeling.
Yeah, we are more powerful, I think, than we ever think that we are, truly. I mean, I don't know. At least I've found that for myself in my relationships. And then on the flip side, if you know, that relationship isn't going the way that I want to, I can also exit it, which I know that I've heard both of you say, and that's something that, like, our relationship, the three of us together, has also shown us, like, that relationships can be really good and really healthy and function at a really high level. And I really appreciate that, too.
Yeah, and I think that leads to, you know, if we want to close this out by thinking about the future, thinking about the next 300 episodes.
Yeah.
Gosh, what if we started with just, like, the next 100? Because 300, that's like 6 years more of episodes.
So, well, no, I tried to look it up, but, like, Joe Rogan has done, like, 1,500.
Oh,
and he's
my
super,
God.
Yeah, he's super controversial, but I know that he's done, like, 1,500 episodes of his show or something, and I think that he said, like, it took, like, 500 to get, like, super in the groove of things. So,
okay, so we're not even there yet.
That's no, we're not even there yet. And personally,
what
yeah,
is,
like,
the groove going to be? Is
I don't
that
know.
When we,
I,
gosh.
Yeah, when we just, like, there's no problem, like, it just flows. It flows like the eustress stuff that we talked about.
Is he a daily podcast?
Oh, I don't know. He does, like, 3-hour podcasts, though. I cannot imagine.
He could be daily. He came out in 2009. So he's been doing this for 10 years.
It must be weekly.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Wow. Okay. So, right. okay. I mean, I guess what I would want for this show, and what I feel like I want in my work, and to a certain extent, I feel like is a little bit of my life's purpose that I want to forward on this earth, is, you know, I've realized about my own life, I feel so happy and so lucky and so fortunate that I have these handful of relationships, like Emily and Jace and my partner Alex and, you know, my close friends and, like, my sister. You know, it's like I have this handful of relationships that are like these little points of light. They're like little stars in a night sky when it's really dark. And it's like, these are the things. Oh, boy. Okay. Okay. Oh, sorry. Geez. Sorry. Getting the emojis.
Yeah.
They're just like these little points of light that like keep me going when things are really tough and really awful. And I'm just like so glad to have these really life sustaining, life giving relationships. And coming from a place where it's been very much the opposite, coming from a place where my relationships have been very draining and very depressing and bad and toxic and really unhealthy for me. And just realizing that it's like, it really doesn't have to be that way. You know, like we come onto this earth and we don't have to have bad relationships, you know, like Amen. Toxicity and unhealthy dynamics and pain do not have to be a fundamental part of loving somebody. And so I feel like for me, it's just thinking kind of broad strokes about what I want for the show moving forward is just more of that. Like ultimately, it's not even about monogamy, non-monogamy, sex or no sex or things like that. It is just about, you know, how can you just make your immediate sphere around you feel better and be restoring life and energy to you in your relationships. And I mean, I do think that's how we change the world, is by changing our relationships. Like really, at the end of the day.
Oh, that's great.
I don't think I could say it any better than that. That's unbelievable. Yeah, you can't see it, but we're hurting all of you out there. We're
doing yeah, the little heart symbol. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I would want to say just to like some concrete goals for the next 100 episodes.
Oh, please. Too, yes.
Is our, hopefully,
private
our book.
Jet.
Our book will get published at, yes. Hopefully yes. At some point in that next 100 episodes. So that'll be cool to do something like that together and to, you know, put that out into the world. Also, for a while now, we've been working on putting together a study of polyamory that would be something ongoing, actually contributing to the research that's out there, since it's still, there's more research now on non-monogamy, but it's still something that's not very well funded in the world of research. It's not, there's not a ton of interest in that. So that's something I'm excited about on a more concrete level. Eventually, I'd love to go on tour again once we can travel the world again. That'll be awesome.
So we can get out of the United States of America again? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just for those of you please. Who were shouting at your podcast machines a moment ago, Joe Rogan is a daily podcast.
Oh, okay.
That's how his numbers are
Holy
that high.
Holy shit.
Good Lord. Yeah.
And they're all like 3-hour episodes. It's wild.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Every day.
It's
bonkers. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I would love to connect more with our audience, and I think we'll maybe talk about this a little bit more in our bonus episode, but I have so loved like getting to know some of you out there and like on a more personal level, and we have an amazing mod team for our Facebook group. We have some amazing people who we work with that have brought this show to such a higher level than it ever was before when we were around one recorder underneath a blanket in freaking 100 degree weather in Jason, my apartment when we started this thing. Yeah. And, you know, so thank you all for that, for being a part of this and going on this journey with us together. So I'm so excited to like get more perspectives, raise people up who's, you know, on our platform, who maybe wouldn't get a good platform before, like if we can help in any way, like all of those things I think will be great. So we've got a lot of work to do, but let's move that progressive agenda forward and have everyone be more understanding of each other. So thank you all for going on this journey with us, as we have said for the last 300 episodes, and here's to at least 100, if not 300 or 1,000 more. We'll see how it goes. We're going to talk a little bit more in depth in our bonus episode. Just, you know, go even deeper here for all of you in our Patreon group. So we're excited to do that. And I would love to know, actually, for our poll this week, what your favorite episode has been. And I know that we've done this in our Facebook group, but for those of you who are not a part of that, we would love to know what your favorite episode has been. That would be great. So the best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Dedeker Winston, and me, Emily Matlack. Our episodes are edited by the amazing Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is the compelling Will McMillan. Our production assistants are the phenomenal Rachel Schenowork and the dazzling Carson Collins. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by the radiant Josh Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.